Hello, and welcome to Sonoran Desert Institute's School of Firearms Technology's official podcast, The Gun Rack. Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Gun Rack, Sonoran Desert Institute's School of Firearms Technology's official podcast. I'm Josiah Upper. Folks, call me Joey, and today, we are going to talk about some military history. Although the month of June does not have any major, like it's not VE Day, it's not VJ Day, it's not the day we entered the war. There are major events during the course of World War II that took place in June. We have already talked about D-Day and how big and important a day that is. It is absolutely fantastic to have an opportunity to remember the sacrifice of those who went in and took a foothold in northern and western Europe to liberate the continent from Nazism and fascism. Today we're going to talk about an event that did not go nearly as well for our good friends, the Allies. We're going to be talking today about the Battle of France. The Battle of France is also known as the Fall of France, in case you were wondering how this little show ends. The Fall of France, or the Battle of France, whatever you would like to call it, I'm probably going to use them interchangeably, was the German invasion of the Low Countries. We're looking at the Netherlands and Belgium. I'm probably missing one there. But the Low Countries and France. That is, according to the New World Encyclopedia, executed from May 10th, 1940, and went on in one capacity or another until June 25th, 1940. The battle consisted of two main acts, or two main operations, whichever you want to call it. The first one is Case Yellow, and that's the German term for it. That is when German armored units pushed through the Ardennes to cut off Allied units that had gone into Belgium in a replication of one of the major actions that took place during World War I. So the Allied units make a push into the Low Countries to prevent Germany from doing the same. And the Germans, pretty cleverly, popped through the Ardennes Forest in order to cut them off. So that's Case Yellow. The second one is Case Red. And that one went from June 5th. And that's where things really, really go bad for the French and for the Allies. The Germans outflank the Maginot Line very famously. And of course, as we know, the French were big believers in static defense, or at least that's how it panned out in this particular case. And not only were they outflankable, they were also, they put their guns, their huge entrenchments, facing in one direction, and you couldn't really adjust them all that much. So as soon as they got outflanked, all of their hard work just went right out the window. So anyway, Case Yellow, Case Red. Case Red is what led to the major victory in France. Italy also went in on the war in France on June 10th, according to the New World Encyclopedia. June 25th saw the capitulation of France, and June 14th saw the occupation of Paris. Not a good time. Obviously, for the Axis, huge win the fall of France was. But we are going to talk about what happened, some of the German strategy. This is all straight from the New World Encyclopedia. And we're going to try to get a little bit in more detail than your average documentary might do. So, first thing is first, German strategy. And the first thing that New World Encyclopedia mentions is that Hitler had just fantasized about huge sweeping campaigns that would defeat the Allies as a prerequisite to a resounding victory in the East. So in World War I, we see something called the Schlieffen Plan, not sure how that's pronounced. And the idea was to eliminate the West as a factor so that they could focus on the Russian bear. We're going to see some of that again. And what Hitler really wanted to do was knock the West one way or the other out of the fight so that they could focus on the real huge enemy, which is, of course, Russia or the USSR at that point in time. However, the Führer Directive number 6 was a plan that saw a lot of light at this time. The plan was based on the assumption that in 1939, Germany wasn't ready to take down France and the United Kingdom or Great Britain. French military was extremely strong, extremely populous. They had lots of tanks. They were ready to go. There is this stigma around the French military surrounding their rapid collapse to the Wehrmacht. But France's military was, there were a lot of men and there were a lot of materiel, and they were ready for a fight. And another thing that people tend to ignore is that the French military fought their tails off in the First World War. This was not supposed to be a pushover. The French fought like madmen in the First World War, and there was little reason to believe that they wouldn't do so for the Second World War. So Führer Directive number 6 was the plan on the assumption that Germany couldn't just smash its way through France, but that they would have to build up for a few more years. And that for the moment, they could only do limited, only make limited strategic moves, okay? So they, their plan out of number 6, according to New World Encyclopedia, was to conquer the Low Countries. So the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg. That was the one I was missing. So Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg. And the idea was to do that as fast as possible so that France could not do the same, right? They could not occupy first, which would threaten an enormous portion of Germany, the Ruhr area, which was extremely vital, not only because it's German turf, but because there is a fair amount of industrial work that goes on there. It would also, if they occupied the Netherlands or Belgium, that's a excellent place to launch air and sea attacks against the United Kingdom. You're much, much closer to the UK. It's a lot stronger. There were, funnily enough, and this is straight from New World Encyclopedia, it says, there was no mention in the Führer Directive of any immediately consecutive attack to conquer the whole of France, although as much as possible of the border areas in northern France should be occupied. So while this thing was written, the Hitler is saying, I don't think that we can take France. We just need to get ourselves in a really good position for a war of attrition, and then we need to build ourselves up to smash our way through. Now, the one thing Hitler did here that was just completely a strategic error is that he assumed that the attack could be done in a few weeks. And of course, shock of all shocks, Hitler's minions lied to him about military readiness, and it would take months, right? So Poland was invaded in September of 1939. The United Kingdom, or Great Britain, I swear I've done that twice already. The United Kingdom declared war, and France declared war in support of Poland, but they didn't do very much, right? So Hitler thought he could pivot and take those strategic objectives, but the motorized units had months and months of repairs and ammunition replenishments, etc., that needed to be taken care of. So, on October 10th, 1939, the British formally refused Hitler's offer of peace. Hitler wanted them out of the fight, and he didn't care if it was bloodless, right? Britain was not who Hitler was looking to steal land from, right? They didn't care all that much about the colonial portions. They wanted Russia. They wanted to take the Eastern Front. So while colonies would have been an interesting perspective maybe for after this war that Hitler started. It was not what he was thinking of at that point in time. On the 12th of October, France did the same thing, according to New World Encyclopedia. We're going to start calling that the NWE for the sake of my vocal cords. On October 19th, a week after France said no, Chief of Staff of the German OKH, the German Army High Command, Franz Hodler, presented the first plan for Case Yellow, and the pre-war code name of plays for campaigns of the Low Countries, etc., etc. Hodler's plan was... and is, by historians, often compared to the Schlieffen Plan, which the Germans did during 1914, during World War I. This plan involved what was going to be estimated as 500,000 German dead in a frontal assault on France. The idea was that they would sacrifice 500,000 Germans, and that was what was going to bring about victory, and it was not taken very well. So the idea was that they could push the Allies back to the Somme, which, of course, very famous World War I location. Then by 1942, they could do a main attack against France. Obviously, this had very little bearing on what actually took place, right? Germany flew through France in 1940. Hitler was disappointed in Hodler's plan, as you might imagine. And it was going to be a long and difficult slog if you went through Hodler's game plan. And Hitler believed, just like he believed pretty much every campaign would be, he thought it would be a inexpensive and fast war. And funnily enough, it actually panned out to be his way, and not Hodler's way, which is very rarely the case for military history. So obviously that plan is not what came to be. So what did come to be? So now we come to the Manstein plan, which really should probably be called the von Manstein-Heinz-Guderian plan. The two of them came up with it together. Lieutenant General Heinz Guderian happened to be in a nearby hotel while von Manstein came up with this attack, so they ended up cooperating on it. The idea was, instead of this ridiculous, costly frontal assault, this inefficient way of fighting that was proven to be irrelevant in the First World War, they would instead concentrate armor and push west and then north and attack from the south and try to cut off as many troops as possible. Does that sound familiar? Because that's a heck of a lot closer to what happened in real life. At that point, the main objection from dissenters was that it would create an open flank of almost 200 miles, vulnerable to French counterattack, which the French did inevitably try to do. But von Manstein wrote his first outline for this alternative plan in on Halloween on 1939. So he avoided the mention, and this is according to NWE, of Guderian's name, and tried to downplay armored units so that people wouldn't get ticked off at them. Funnily enough, and by mid-January, all of these memoranda that were being created were rejected by the high command, and none of it reached Hitler. Without skipping too far ahead, what happened next was some back and forth on plans, and eventually in February, on the 17th, von Manstein was invited to explain his plan to Hitler specifically. Hitler liked it because there was an opportunity maybe to have a cheap victory in terms of men and materiel, like we were talking about before. So, unfortunately, Franz Halder, von Manstein was not further involved in the plan. Franz Halder was obligated to carry out the changes, and at the same time, or rather in April of 1940, the Germans attacked Denmark and Norway, so things started to really heat up. So now we have a bit of a picture of what the Germans were ready to do. Let's switch over to the Allied side. In September of 1939, Belgium and the Netherlands, it's important to remember, were not allies. They were neutral countries. And France did not have the Low Countries to swing through yet, even if that proved to be an error. Their plan in September of 1939, recognizing that they were not ready for a war with Germany, was to make a quote-unquote attack to fulfill their guarantee to Poland to attack in relief of the Eastern Front, the Eastern Front being Poland at this point in time. French soldiers advanced 5 kilometers, that's 3.2 miles, into the Saar before withdrawing the next month. So, after that, as I'm certain you know from many a documentary and history book, it was decided that they should not take the initiative the next year, in 1940, because they wanted to modernize, even though large parts of the French army, and this is from MWE, in the 1930s had been designed to wage offensive warfare. So they neutered themselves in a way. The hope was that if they blockaded Germany, which they were pretty capable of doing, that they would collapse. The government might be destabilized and things might fall apart. There had been some success in that manner during the First World War. So it was run it back and fight the same war twice, which, as any military historian will tell you, is a recipe for failure every single time, virtually guaranteed. In the event that the government didn't fall apart due to the blockade, they were going to modernize and enlarge and basically just try to ramp up their forces as best they could to swing an offensive in summer 1941. If the Low Countries, so Luxembourg, Belgium, Netherlands, not become allies by that point in time, the Allies intended to violate their neutrality if they had to, according to NWE. So, that's a lot of word vomit, but the short answer is, too little too late was the French plans here. While the French themselves were prepared to fight, their generalship was exceedingly poor, and their planning was poor as well. That being said, the French Supreme Commander, Maurice Gamelin, anticipated the mechanized nature of the German attack. Their intention, or his intention, was to narrow the battle for France to be an enormous tank battle, but, of course, those tanks were not exactly where they needed to be to prevent a German breakthrough. Let's talk about the forces lined up. According to NWE, Germany deployed about 3 million men for the battle, which, wow. And this included a lot of troops that had not had full training because the German government had been told that they were not permitted to conscript soldiers into service by the Treaty of Versailles, and while they, of course, ignored that, there is certainly a time delay between when you ignore a treaty and when the full effect of ignoring a treaty is felt. A lot of these combat troops were veterans of the First World War. Germany also was to deploy over May and June 2,700 tanks and self-propelled guns, and about 7,500 artillery pieces, which is, it's a lot. The Allies, on May 10th, this is right from NWE, there were 93 French, 22 Belgian, 10 British, and 9 Dutch divisions in the north, total of 134 divisions. 6 of these were armored, 24 were motorized. The Allied forces deployed an organic strength of about 3,100 modern tanks and self-propelled guns on May 10th. Another 1,200 were committed to battle in new units from the material reserves. Also, 1,500 obsolete FT-17 tanks were sent to the front for a total of about 5,800. They had about 14,000 pieces of artillery. The Allies thus enjoyed a clear numerical superiority on the ground, but were inferior in the air. At the beginning of Case Red, the French aviation industry had reached a considerable output and had estimated the materiel reserve at nearly 2,000 planes. However, lack of spare parts crippled the stocked fleet, etc., etc. The point is, the Allies had the ground, the Germans had the air, and the Germans had to step up on the ground to make this campaign work. So Germany began Case Yellow on the evening prior to the 10th of May, according to NWE. Late evening, German forces occupied Luxembourg. In case you don't have a map in front of you, Luxembourg is tiny. It is one of the smallest nations in the world. The Germans almost immediately deployed their feint into the Low Country. This fooled the Allied First Army Group to make their way in and stripped the area that the Germans were to penetrate of some soldiers. The Luftwaffe nailed air superiority over the Netherlands and over central Belgium. And while there's a lot to talk about, let's go right to the center, because that's where things get really interesting. So in the center, straight from NWE, the progress of German Army Group A was delayed by Belgian motorized infantry and French mechanized cavalry divisions advancing into the Ardennes, which a lot of people don't talk about. They act as though the Ardennes just had no soldiers in it. But no, there were troops advancing into it, but those troops did not have enough anti-tank capacity to block the enormous number of German tanks that were powering their way through, and they gave way. German advance forces hit the Meuse line already by the end of May 12th. Fighting in and around Sedan forced a staggering haggard retreat, and French morale throughout the lines was shocked. Not long after this, however, Guderian and one Erwin Rommel, who would later surge on to fame, were told in the middle of May that they needed to essentially dig in and prepare for counterattacks. And both of them said no, and in complete disregard for their orders, they broke out of the bridgeheads they had created across rivers and moved their divisions way to the west as fast as they could go. And Guderian reportedly reached 80 kilometers away from Sedan, where Rommel made it 100 kilometers from his bridgehead at Dinan. Rommel actually moved so fast that he went out of radio contact range, and his 7th Panzer Division got the name Ghost Division because no one knew where they were. Now, the Allied reaction to this was not ideal. As NWE reports, if the Panzer Corps, first of all, they slowed down considerably after that bit of insubordination, but they had put themselves in a really, actually a bad position. They were stretched out, they were low on fuel, and these troopers and tankers were exhausted. Tanks had broken down, as they do, and the infantry was too far behind them to adequately reinforce for some time, and if a large enough mechanized force from the French and British and lowland countries came in to cut off the panzers, they could have done it. But the French command was shocked by this sudden offensive and moves, and they were stung by a sense of defeatism, to quote NWE. On the 15th of May, French Prime Minister Paul Reynaud telephoned Winston Churchill and said, "We have been defeated. We are beaten. We have lost the battle." Churchill tried to console him, reminding him that the Germans had broken through the Allied lines in World War II, and the French had turned the thing around, but Reynaud was inconsolable. Churchill flew to Paris on the 16th, and he said, one of the commanders, actually he said it to General Gamelin, who he mentioned before, where's the strategic reserve? The strategic reserve had been Paris's deliverance in the First World War. And Gamelin looked at him and said, there is none. And later, according to NWE, Churchill said, this was the single most shocking moment of his life. And Churchill asked Gamelin where and when the general proposed to launch a counterattack. And Gamelin simply replied, inferiority of numbers, inferiority of equipment, inferiority of methods. Like, Gamelin was not there. The reserve divisions, in that sense, he was right. They had already been committed. There was nothing to do. There was one single armored division in reserve, and it obviously did not succeed in holding the Germans back or pushing through the German lines. We could go into a lot more detail on more of the aspects here. But the rest is more or less history. The British and a lot of the French were cut off and were able to escape largely at Dunkirk thanks to Operation Dynamo, which involved a lot of military appropriation of naval vessels and also private people and entities. Sending their ships to go get people out of Dunkirk and preventing the annihilation of the British Expeditionary Force, which absolutely would have happened. And according to NWE, 198,000 British soldiers, more or less, were evacuated during Dynamo, along with 140,000 French. It has also been said by many documentarians and writers in the past that there are few military entities that have been so brave as the soldiers that held the rear guard action at Dunkirk that were not able to make it. The Germans were able to take Paris and it fell. Germany was completely in control of air nearly the entire time. And the French surrendered in June 1940, and France would not be liberated until 1944, despite some pokes and prods over the course of the years to try to gain some inroads. Studying the fall of the French Republic is one of the saddest things to do in military history. The Allies were fully capable of making more of a fight or even winning this battle, and instead the leadership simply chose to not act decisively, and in that lack of decisive action lay defeat for the French in particular and the Allies in general. It was a smashing Axis victory, almost entirely the Germans, although the Italians did declare war on France during the middle of the battle for France. I know that's a little depressing. I just wanted to have a nice, deep, thorough history session. We haven't done it in a while. Hope you guys appreciated it. I know I left some things out and got really detailed in some areas. One of these days, I'll write out a full thing and I'll just read it to you guys. But today is not that day. For now, this is the Gun Rack. Have fun out there, guys. We'll see you at the range. Sonoran Desert Institute is an online school located at 1555 West University Drive in Tempe, Arizona, accredited by the DEAC. For more information, please call 800-336-8939 or visit sdi.edu.